Hey everybody, Wasilla Steve here from Alaska. You know, I listen to five or six podcasts regularly, and one of them is the handgun world. And why? Because I, too, am a cancer survivor. And because Bob survived cancer, and I survived cancer, Bob got the pleasure of teaching me in two of his classes. And boy, did he ever enjoy that. And I'm not trying to brag or anything, but he taught the best student he has ever had. That being my good friend who attended the classes with me. So here now, a true survivor, a great American, and hands down, one of the best instructors I know, Bob Main.
Hi folks, I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Well, today is July 6th. That's the date that I'm recording this. I'm going to go back to giving you the date that I'm recording because it kind of gives you a perspective as to, you know, what's going on and what the time frame is at the time that I'm talking about all of this gun stuff. So a couple of days ago, I had a chance to spend the 4th of July bringing in or celebrating my freedoms in a really cool way. Ben Branham and I got a chance to go shoot on 4th of July, a special fun shoot that AASA was putting on in San Antonio. American Action Shooting Association, a pretty cool competitive league, competition league that I like to participate in quite a bit. I've talked about them before on episodes, other episodes, and I've explained why I like them. In fact, why I actually kind of like their league better than IDPA or IPSC, although I do still shoot IDPA. Anyway, so we had a chance to do that on July 4th, but on the way to the range, Ben and I kind of interviewed him. We kind of had a good discussion about a bunch of stuff. So, you know, again, I'm going to call this Mixed Bag Ben. And I've titled episodes like that before, Mixed Bag Ben. But it's kind of appropriate because we just talked about a whole bunch of gun stuff. And I think you're going to really enjoy this. So don't forget to support my sponsor, Concealment Solutions. ConcealmentSolutions.com. You know, I tell you what, I don't carry appendix much lately. I don't carry in the appendix carry position much lately. I used to carry an appendix position a lot. I used to be a huge believer in appendix carry, and I'm not against appendix carry. I still believe in it, and it's still a great way to carry. And if that works best for you, by all means, carry that way. I tell you why I don't carry in that position much anymore. It has nothing to do with the conventional reasons why people don't appendix carry. I'm not afraid of it like some people are. I don't have an uncomfortable feeling with the gun pointed in that direction like some people do. And I think a lot of that stuff is way overblown. I used to carry an appendix position for one primary reason. That it was very fast. Very fast draw. Some people say they can conceal a gun better in the appendix carry position. I don't really notice much of a difference. And I'm going to talk about that here coming up very shortly. I just like to have the ability to draw my pistol and be fast. A fast draw. I like that. Well, since Concealment Solutions started making the outside the waistband Cobra holsters, that's the biggest reason why I primarily carry strong side hip at about 330. The biggest reason for that is because of the fine job that Jason does making an outside the waistband holster that conceals well. And that's an extremely quick draw, folks. You know, drawing from my strong side hip, if it's outside the waistband, that's the key. The key that is that it's outside the waistband, and it's an Al-Kydex holster. So it's fast, and I mean really fast. And that was the big attraction for me to carry appendix position. But it's also very comfortable. It's very comfortable carrying outside the waistband. No matter what activity I'm doing, it's very comfortable. And when it conceals the gun well, especially a small single stack, man, I tell you what, when I carry my Shield or my Glock 43 or my Walther PPS M2 in the appendix carry, in the outside the waistband, in a Cobra outside the waistband holster by Concealment Solutions, it's awesome. I mean, it's super comfortable and super fast if I have to draw it. So, you know, I wanted to talk to you about that and let you know, because a lot of people have asked me why I don't appendix carry as much as I used to. I still do occasionally. Most of the time, I carry my car PM9, my car arms PM9 appendix carry, and just because that's so small that it's, and it's really, for some reason, it's real fast for me to draw that gun. I'm not sure why. It seems to be quicker for me to draw that gun than some of the other single stacks I have, even in the appendix carry inside the waistband. I'm all about speed, folks. I'm all about speed. Okay, so enjoy this talk that I had with Ben Branham on the way to our 4th of July fun shoot at AASA. Okay, I got a special guest in the car with me. You guys have never heard of him before. So, you know, I figured that I would give him a chance, his little bit of chance at stardom and fame. So, it's Ben Branham. How's it going, Ben?
It's going good. I guess that's how we started this whole mess, is nobody's ever heard of me. But now you made me popular. You're the only one, Bob.
Nobody ever heard of me back in August of 2009. I was thinking about it the other day. And so August of 2009 makes 7 years for me. Excuse me, August of this year makes 7 years for me.
I can't even remember. I should go back through my emails and see when I sent you that first email and say, hey, Bob, this is me.
I think it was...
That was a long time ago.
Early 2011.
So 5 years ago?
Yeah, well, no, actually, yeah, I think it was. I think it was about early 2011, maybe. It might have even been the... No, it had to have been in 2011 because I didn't move to San Antonio until 2011.
Yeah, you were already here in San Antonio when I sent you an email. And then, yeah, that was funny. We're going to go to a competition that first day. I was like, hey, you called me back because I put my phone number on there. And I was just like, oh, yeah, there's this competition this week and I'm trying to go to. You want to go? And then we're arguing about whose house we're going to meet at. You're like, this random gun guy, do I really want him coming over my house? And I'm like, this random gun guy, do I really want him coming over my house? We ended up meeting at my house, and I figured, well, I know who you are more as a podcaster.
Well, you know us random gun people, we're all good people. Most of us, we're all good salt-of-the-earth people. That's what a lot of, you know, the anti-gunners, they just don't understand that about us.
Well, I'll give you 99% of us are good. I bet the general population of the gun culture, I bet the gun culture is a lot better people than... general population, but you're still looking for that 1%. You're like, do I really want to invite this person over to my home with my family before I even know him or met him in person?
Yeah.
Let's meet in person first.
It worked out, though,
no,
didn't
that
it?
Was good. Yeah, I drove that truck the first day. We went up to Austin from San Antonio, shot that match, had a blast. I kept embarrassing you. I mean, this is Bob May. Don't you know who this is? This is the Handgun World Podcaster. You don't know who this is.
I've gotten over that now.
That was a lot of fun.
It used to be a little slightly embarrassing, but I've gotten over it now. You know, it's like, it's July 4th. Today's July 4th. Now, you know, folks listening to this.
Happy Independence Day.
Yeah, it's going to be about a week after the 4th by the time this podcast gets released. But happy birthday, America.
Hey, we're only reminiscing because we are on the way to a shooting match July 4th.
We're on our way to a very special July 4th shooting match. America's 240 years old today.
Cool. You looked it up before you did the math.
I'm college edumacated. So I can do the math.
So you looked it up?
Yes. Yes, I looked it up. I used
read it somewhere this morning.
I used my college edumacation to look it up. So yeah, we're gonna start the fourth with a
what is this, AASA?
AASA, American Action Shooting Association,
which is a blast. Ted Bonnet runs it, right?
Ted Bonnet, yes.
It's kind of, I like it because it's more fun than anything else, and it truly works on just the gun handling skills.
Yes.
The tactics are out the window, like IDPA is trying to do. USPSA with all the complicated stage, that's out the window. And a lot of the stages are just a bunch of steel and with different colored steel, and you got to shoot them different number of times with the colors.
Yes.
And it's just a blast.
So it makes you think. That's one thing I like. And in, I've said this before, but I'll say it again. In this league, you can load your magazines to full capacity.
And it's run what you got. Bring whatever you got. He'll put you in whatever classification for whatever gun you're carrying.
Yep.
And whatever you want to shoot, go for it.
I think he's only got four or five classifications. And all guns, no matter what it is, you can load your mags to full capacity. So if you've got a 20-round 9mm pistol, some of these stages you can shoot without having to reload.
Yeah, if my friend shows up, he's going to bring his 30-round magazines.
Oh, I forgot those. I was going to... You know, last weekend I said I was going to bring those.
Uh-huh, I didn't bring... I brought one 30-round mag just because I need to run it to see if it works or not for my M&P. So I'm trying to test things, but I don't know. I've got the Glock Timberwolf in my bag.
You going
to
shoot that today?
I haven't shot a competition. I haven't shot it much. I might just... Forgive the language, but I might just screw off and forget about training and just have fun and just shoot the Timberwolf and see how fast I can go. And if I miss half the targets, eh.
Well, you know, one of the big benefits of shooting these competition matches is having fun. You got to have fun.
Well, I normally have a blast, but I always have something I'm trying to test or work on.
Well, yeah.
If nothing else, I'm always working on my skills because I'm using my carry gun. And then, I don't know, today I was going through my safe last night, getting all my stuff together, and I saw that Timberwolf frame, and I was like, I have not shot that Glock Timberwolf.
Shoot the Glock Timberwolf.
So I think I'm going to do that. I got a holster and a couple mags, and I'll just shoot that. I mean, I think I got one Glock mag and two P mags to try, so
there
that's
you go.
My excuse. I need to test those P mags more.
Yeah, I'm going to shoot a boring old G19, just a boring Glock 19, but I did bring my SIG Legion 229. The reason I'm not competing with that today is I don't have a holster and mag pouches for it, so I'll be ordering one from Jason soon. But hopefully at the end of the match I'm going to get a chance to pull the trigger on that Legion for a while.
Yeah, I don't know why you haven't ordered a holster yet. You got to get on.
I've just been forgetful.
Holster and mag pouches. Let's go.
Holster and mag pouches. And a couple of extra mags, too.
Yeah, that's one. It came with three, though, didn't it?
Came with three. That's nice. You know, SIG, that's pretty good for them to put three mags in there.
Well, the $1,500 gun, I don't think it adequately.
Not quite that much. Yeah. Not quite that much.
I think that's what they're MSRPing. Retail
MSRP, price. Yeah.
Retail cost is $13 or $14, but that's still...
I got it from that place called Sparks Firearms.
Yes, and I cut Bob a fat deal because it's
gone. But I'm looking forward to doing some more competition and training with that gun. It's... You know, I've shot I think about 75 rounds through it so far. The more I dry fire that gun, the more I like it. The more I like the way it feels and handles. The trigger is incredible. Even the double action trigger.
I gotta say, after we got the first one in single action only.
Oh yeah.
And I almost sold like five guns to buy it because I was just like, oh, holy Toledo! You pull the trigger and then you feel the reset. Pull the trigger again, and it's just
yep.
like.
Oh yeah, it's nice.
Jesus.
If you get a SIG Legion 229 single action, call me immediately.
I will. I don't think they make them yet, though.
No, I know, but if they do, when they start to make the single action, I like the 229 size better. I like the compact better. It works for me better than the full size 226.
Well, I'll give you guys an inside because firearms inside. So a normal 226 single action only gun, they're $2,000, $2,200, depending on what kind of configuration you buy.
Yeah.
But the Legion 226s are only $100 more than the other Legions. So if anybody ever wanted a single action SIG in 9mm, the Legion is the way to go. It's actually cheaper than all the other ones.
Yeah.
It's got a different trigger in it. I think it's pretty amazing. So.
And that's why I wanted, I wanted the compact size, 229.
Yeah. Inside baseball right there.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks for the inside baseball. So, Let's shift gears a little bit, Ben. How was the Alaska class?
I knew you were going to ask me about Alaska. We missed you a lot, Bob.
Well, I regret not being there. I really do. I actually could have pulled it off. And it was a decision I made. I'm glad I was at home with my family, but I could have pulled it off. You guys looked like you had a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it was an amazing group of students. They were, half of them were instructors themselves, so that was awesome to see instructor development go on.
Yes.
Actually got to speak more as an instructor to instructors, which was cool. The class went a little different, and the guys that were shooting were incredible. We do that five-round group at the beginning, and part of it, we do a five-round group at the beginning of every class, so everybody gets to tune up a little bit. But as an instructor, I get to see what your gun handling skills look like, what your trigger control look like, and then what's your attitude when I give you a little bit of correction on the next group to see if it works for you or not.
Yeah.
But these guys, I put them on the five-yard line, and they had, like, every single one of them had bullets touching, like, itty-bitties, and it's like,
nice.
And it was hard to see correction, so I had to back them up the second day to do it again. I put them at like 9 yards, almost 10 yards, just so I could see where their groups were moving and see if I could help them correct a little bit in their shooting to get them a little bit better, tighter groups, a little bit better trigger control. So it was a lot of fun to be in that. It was a different world. It was like I'm teaching these advanced students the intermediate class. So I really had a lot of fun. We did a lot of stuff running up and down the range.
Good.
We got through everything. Plus, I got to talk a little bit more, and the students got to talk a little bit more. We traded off during lunch. They were talking amongst each other, teaching each other stuff. You know, you get a group of instructors together, and what are they going to do? They're going to start to teach each other.
Exactly.
It never stops.
They're going to start instructing.
So we had a blast. I gotta say, Alaska is one of those few places I've been that I just didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
But we were there looking at it, I'm like, this is awesome.
Well, I've seen a lot of the videos that you guys have put up, videos and pictures. It just looks fantastic.
Except for that midnight sun thing. That would take a while to get used to.
How was that?
The sun went down at like 1 a.m. Sleeping was a problem the first night. The first day, I'm there Saturday, I didn't get to sleep until like 12:30. The sun's still out. And then I got up at whatever, we had to get up at 6 the next morning to get out on the range. Like, caffeine, I need lots of caffeine. But other than that, the trip was awesome. The flights were pretty good. I gotta say, I flew United for the first time since forever.
Yeah.
And it was actually, if you learn a couple tricks that I just kind of stumbled into, fell head first into the trick on how to get a really great seat, it was a nice flight. I enjoyed most of my flights.
Good.
Except for being a big guy, I swear, every time I get on a plane with assigned seating, there is, I don't know, if somebody works in the airline industry, and especially people at the ticket counter, I have this theory that they see me as the big guy, and they play a joke, or one of the big guys makes them mad, so they find the two biggest guys on the plane,
they put you together.
Next to each other. That was my first flight, and the guy next to me, you know, I'm always trying to joke about it. He was pissed off. He had his earphones on, but he wasn't playing any music. I'm trying to talk to him. He's ignoring me. He was just pissed off the whole flight. We got stuck on the tarmac for like 15 minutes when we landed. And then once we all stood up and were standing in the aisles, he actually grew up for his personality. He was a really nice guy. But, yeah, the whole time he sat next to me for that two-hour flight, he was just like fuming. I'm like, dude, are you all right?
I've been flying for 30 years, and some people just have a bad attitude when they fly. I don't understand why.
I think it was my fat butt in the sack next to him.
Maybe that's what it was, yeah.
He thought he was going to have that seat next to him by himself, and then it just ended up to be, it was funny.
Well, to our friends in Alaska, thanks very much for coming to the class. Sorry I couldn't make it. I'll make it next time. Yes, there will be a next time.
Well, double thanks to Wasilla Steve and the Tactical Hobbit out there that hosted the class, took me around, picked me up from the airport. They did all the work to get the class going, and those guys are awesome.
And I saw you took a nice boat trip.
Oh, yeah. I had to do something touristy when I was there. They took me out onto the Cognac, whatever. I don't know. Remember what it is. I'm going to screw it up. Sorry, guys. I don't know anything out there. They said, hey, we're going to go here, and you should do this. I got in the truck with them, and I went out on a six-hour boat trip. Got to see a bunch of whales, which was kind of cool, but I've seen that before. And then we went out to see the glaciers and the ice, and that was incredible because I'd never been. You know, I've seen it in pictures, but it's just when you get there, it's just breathtaking.
In person, it's amazing, isn't it?
It was incredible. And the amount of cold that comes off of Glacier, holy stink.
Yeah.
This poor southern boy now was freezing my tail off looking at that glacier.
And by the way, to all of our friends near the glaciers in Alaska, down here in San Antonio, it's going to hit 101 today on July 4th. So you guys are going to be smiling up there in Alaska. But then, you know what? We'll do this again in February, on the 1st of February, and then we'll ask the folks in Alaska what it's like up there.
Yeah, they'll be like, what the heck? Yeah, I think all the guys up there are like, it's not so bad up here in the winter. You should come.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of funny because one of the couples that took the class, they're like, yeah, we're going to go visit the lower 48 around October or November. I'm like, if you're in San Antonio, come by. We'll take you shooting. But it was just funny. They're like, I'm like, so it's really not that bad, huh? Even though they're going to go, you know, they're going to go south for the winter.
Yeah.
Which is smart. You know, I keep thinking about that. I'm like, I need to find a spot with my family that I can live in the south here because I love Texas for the winter. And then I need to be able to go to somewhere up north for the summer where the weather's nice.
Everybody wants to do that.
Need to be a snowbird.
Everybody wants to do that. That's like me. I'd like to hang out up in northeastern Wisconsin where I'm from in the summer because the summers up there are awesome.
Okay.
They're awesome. I mean, you know, northeastern Wisconsin's got just terrific summers for about a little over 90 days, and that's about it. And then it goes away. So then that's when I like to be down here in South Texas.
Well, that's the problem with South Texas. So winter, the 3 months are doable. And you got that month and a half change between summer and winter.
Right.
And that's really beautiful. But you really only got 6 months down here that it's really nice weather. The other 6 months is kind of too hot and crappy. So I need a spot.
Yep. So you probably don't know this yet, Ben, but I'll announce it. I put a new video up on the Shooters Club. I bought a backpack carry bag for my AR-15.
Oh, cool.
It's kind of a sneaky, discreet backpack-looking bag made by Colt, actually, that I can put an AR in real discreetly and go in and out of hotel rooms and things like that. So I reviewed that bag. So for all Shooters Club members, if you go use your password, get on there, you'll see that new video. I reviewed the bag. Let me know what you think of that.
So now I'm totally interested because my wife calls me a bag whore.
Yeah.
Because I love different bags. I buy them all.
I got it in the trunk.
A million. Do you have to break down the rifle to put it in there?
No, you don't have to break down the rifle.
Oh, no.
And it looks like I'm carrying a massive guitar. Actually, not even that big of a guitar. It just looks like I'm carrying an electric guitar in this nice, you know, discreet backpack. But I got my AR in there, and I can fit a 30-round mag in there. And it's got a bunch of extra pockets to fit extra mags and even a pistol in it and stuff like that. You got to check it out.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, so it's on the Shooters Club, and if you're not a member of the Shooters Club, you know how to join.
And I'm waiting to redo my EDC because I think Caltech just released their Sub 2000, that little fold-in-half 9mm or 40 carbine.
What do you mean just released it?
They just released it in the Smith & Wesson, the M&P mags.
Oh, M&P version.
Because the 40s are all over the market right now.
Yeah.
For the Glock mags. And there's a couple Berettas out there. But I saw that a couple of M&P versions are showing up in the 40, and I think the 9mm will come next. And I'm like, aha! As soon as one of those comes out, I'm going to buy it, and I'm going to get me a bag, fold it in half, put it in there.
There you go.
With a 20-round magazine sticking out of it all the time. Shot one at the range a couple days ago. I was at the range. Impromptu, the guy got a new gun after.
Did you like it?
He goes, yeah, I got to go. Yeah, and it's, you know, it recoils kind of weird, but it's that full bolt. But it did everything that I needed to. The guy just had one with the open sights on it, and it ran like a champ. It
yeah.
Worked great. And I could sit there and just go as fast as I could with the gun and hit targets, a little steel. And I was like, this would be really nice. I really got to get one to ring it out and throw it out at 100 yards, 200 yards, see if I can make hits. But
yeah.
I think I'll be able to make a hit out to 200 yards with my 9mm handgun. And then I don't have to carry extra magazines. I don't have to worry about all that stuff. It's all in there. Pull it out of the bag, unfold it. You know, the world seems to get worse and worse all the time. And I'm not sure if it's just our perception of it or if it's really getting worse. But it seems like the more crime, especially here in Texas, I'm going to have to deal with it's less and less of what, because I just don't go any place anymore where I get robbed. You know, we're going to the shooting range. I don't think I'm going to get robbed at the shooting
probably range. Probably not. We're probably not going to get held up at the shooting range, most likely.
Yeah, most of the time it's that stuff. And then, you know, where else do I go is church, and then I end up at weird places at weird times with my family sometimes. And it just, it would be nice to have a rifle in a bag over my shoulder, like, all the time.
Well, whether you see this little bag I got, it's in the trunk. So after the match, I'll show it to you. And it's pretty cool. You know, I was thinking about getting a pistol caliber carbine, but now that I have a good discreet way to carry an AR, why? Why would I want to have a pistol caliber carbine?
Here, I'm with you. I'd rather have an AR. It's just, yeah. I don't know. I'm thinking this one folds in half, so I'm going to get
yeah.
I like the 511 Rush computer bags.
Uh-huh.
And I think I can get that thing to fold in half and fit in one of those computer bags. And so it looks like I'm carrying my computer all the time with me. And I'll camouflage the bag by putting my computer in it.
There you go.
And, you know, a bunch of my other stuff, my EDC, and then I have one bag all the time. It just goes everywhere with me. And then it doesn't stay in the car, too. I always get paranoid. I don't know about you guys, but I'm paranoid when I leave a gun in my car.
Oh, yeah.
That somebody's going to make that thing disappear. And it's funny, when I worked at the oil company and stuff, I'd had my AK under the seat a lot. And yeah, now I can talk about that because I'm no longer employed with them. And I had other guns in the car or in the truck. And so I always, we'd stop somewhere for lunch and stuff. And I'm like, ah, I want to see my truck. My truck's lonely without me. I got to keep an eye out. And yeah, I'd tell other people it's because I got all the tools in there, which I didn't really, tools are a dime a dozen. I can replace those. I don't really care.
Right.
And most of it belonged to the company anyways. I got a company credit card. I'll just replace it. But it was always that rifle that I was worried about walking off. Everything else, I was like, if it walks off, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, I understand where you're kind of. I get paranoid having weapons in my car too, especially if I'm away from my car for a little while.
So that's the way I'm trying to solve that problem, where I can put it in a computer bag, carry it with me all the time, then it doesn't stay in it.
Well, that's nice. That's nice. You can't put an AR-15 in a computer bag.
Not yet.
Unless you bought something like which I think is pretty cool, like the. The Ruger 5.56 takedown.
Yeah, or there's the new Troy.
Yeah.
The Troy stock, an itty-bitty thing.
Yeah.
That's getting there. You know, if you went a 10-inch rifle with your tax stamp and then did that little Troy stock, the collapsible stock, to me it looks like an MP5 stock if anybody was been around that long.
Yeah.
MP5 used to have the really cool stock that had two wires, one on each side of the frame or the receiver. You pull it out and it would lock in place with just a little thing that came down, go on your shoulder.
But yeah.
You could slam that all the way up against the frame of the gun or the receiver, and it'd make that MP5 super small. So I think Troy took a thing from them and did that.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of those. I've never actually seen one, but I've seen pictures.
Problem is that buffer tube. You always got to have that buffer tube. And
yeah.
Troy redid that. They redid the bolt carrier group. So when you put their smallest stock they have, you have to buy their bolt carrier group. So
okay.
The other problem is that's a $350 system. I bought a stock for my gun. It was $350. Yeah, it gets expensive really, really fast.
Well, you know, a few weeks ago when I was in your shop, I saw you had a Sig Sauer MPX.
Yeah, those are fun.
That looks pretty cool.
I got to tell you, we have the MPX with, it has the arm brace on it.
Yeah.
And it folded with the arm brace.
Yeah, and it folded. Cool. It was a folding stock, yeah.
But making that an SBR with that folding stock on there was awesome. We had a couple of the MPXs come through as just a pistol configuration.
Yeah.
And it sucked. The weight was all off. The balance stunk. It was just front heavy. Didn't hold real well with the trigger group. It was just, I was like, this thing sucks. The handling sucks. I'm like, I don't like it.
But with the brace, you don't have to have a tax stamp, do you?
No, with the brace, but the brace counterbalanced it when you held it.
Yeah.
And,
but you can't shoulder it when you shoot it.
I may or may have not. but once you put that brace on there, and then if you used it like a rifle, air quotes, it became the perfect balanced little gun.
Yeah, I liked
really
it.
Cool.
And I liked it.
I'm going back to more and more of that pistol carbine just because of, without earmuffs, if you fire one of those stupid things inside,
yeah,
you are going to be sorry.
Fire what? A pistol caliber carbine or an AR?
Or an AR rifle inside.
Oh, yeah, an AR inside. Yeah, forget it. Yeah.
And I used to hang, and I need to start doing this again, my AK or my AR, whichever was my go-to gun at the
time. Put earmuffs next to it.
I used to put it muzzled down in my safe,
mm-hmm.
and then put the earmuffs on the stock.
Yeah.
Just my electronic earmuffs, so I could pick them up, turn them on, grab the rifle, then you have... You know, and then people are like, oh, that's stupid and everything. I got news for you. People were still calling me stupid in Iraq in 08, 09. But I had the nice earmuffs. And you know what? I put those earmuffs on.
Yeah.
You turn them up, I got supersonic hearing.
Exactly.
I got hearing like a dog.
Exactly. What's stupid about that?
That was awesome. You got to turn them down a little bit because your breath, your breathing is too loud. But, well, I had that problem in the war when we got the earmuffs on.
Yeah.
And I turned them way up to try to hear something. And then we had to run. And then I get there and all I hear is... And it's like the loudest thing is, oh, I'm sucking wind. All you hear is... I'm like, oh, okay. Turn those down so I can hear something else besides my breath. But yeah, those things, people make fun of them, but I'm like, this is like the best tactical thing that has ever happened. Guys in law enforcement, for God's sakes, buy a good set. My favorite one of the Peltors, MSA makes some really good ones. And even if you just buy the cheap ones that we all use at the range now for $40.
Yeah, those green ones, yeah. What do they call? Impact something?
Yeah, I got to set my bag.
Yeah, so do I.
Extra. Put those on when you grab your rifle.
They're durable.
Well, you put them on, you turn them on. Yes, it takes another second or two. But if you're getting your rifle out of your trunk or out of the rack, you probably have the time. And then you have super hearing. And then if you fire your weapon, it's not going to be a big deal for you. You're not going to lose your hearing. I mean, some of these, especially you guys running short barrel rifles, the SBR is a 10-inch rifle. That 10-inch rifle and that AR, especially if you've got a muzzle brake, that thing can be deafening.
Oh, yeah.
And then where you shoot it is a big deal. Over the hood of your car, I went hunting one time. We're hunting hogs, and I'm in the back of the truck, and the guy stops, and we're doing it by spotlight, so he sees in the front of it. He sees us, and we're out there in, I forget where it was, but we were varmint hunting to get rid of the raccoons and stuff because they were eating all the feed for the cows.
Yeah.
So he stops real quick, and he goes, hey, over the top. You know, it was like raccoon at 12 o'clock. So I put the rifle over the top of his truck and leaned out way far because I want to make sure I didn't get that offset going. I didn't want to shoot his truck.
Right.
But I leaned way out over the top of his truck, fired that gun, and I didn't have a hearing pro on because we were kind of goofing off, and I should have probably had it on, but I didn't.
Ooh, that must have been loud.
Yeah, my muzzle brake, even on that 20-inch gun, I fired it a couple times that day, and it's not hearing safe, so yes, I'm damaging my hearing. But then when I fired it off over the top of the truck, that muzzle brake echoed off the truck, and it rang my chimes.
Ooh, yeah, I'm sure it did.
You fire it, and it goes, whoa, and you have to stop and collect yourself almost for a second. So any guys in law enforcement, any guys thinking you're going to use your rifle for self-defense, you know, the ear pro is almost mandatory. And at this day and age where they're $30 to do it,
yeah,
you can put the supersonic ears on and you can hear everything. And all it's going to do is make you better.
A lot of people don't think about that. Well, we're at the range, and so we'll pick this conversation up again on the way home because... I'm sure we'll have some things to talk about after the match. So,
and we're going to go shooting.
So here comes like a sound effect or a quick commercial break or something. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Rob Morse from the Polite Society Podcast. I took a Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced class with Ben Branham, Bob Main, Chaz Murray, and Tracy Thronberg. I wish every concealed carrier took a class like this one. The class covered both basic shooting skills and advanced topics. Skills like shooting from unusual positions, shooting with one hand while moving, and shooting when in contact with the target. Those are the real skills you want if you were ever forced to use your firearm. I was impressed because I'm not the perfect student. No, far from it. I took the class because I needed competent instructors to teach me and correct my many mistakes. They did that with professional skill. I plan to train with them again.
Well, while Ben and I are at the range shooting the match, I'm going to go ahead and speak to you
Isn't that great the way technology works? I'm going to talk to you a little bit about me. I promised several weeks ago, because I've had some listeners actually ask me a few things about my background. I promised that I would talk a little bit about my background and who I am, who Bob Main is. Why am I here? Why do I do this? Where, how did I get to be here? What's some of my background? What's some of my training? Some of the ups and downs, the challenges and things that I've faced in life and so forth. So here goes. I'm not going to make this very long because this is an intermission here between mixed bag conversations with Ben Branham. By the way, in the last segment, I forgot, or actually in the opening of the show, I forgot to ask you to use the coupon code HandgunWorld to get 10% off of your Concealment Solutions order. HandgunWorld coupon code gets you 10% off of anything you buy at ConcealmentSolutions.com. Okay, who's Bob Main? Well, I'm going to go back to when I was 13 years old. And again, I'm not going to make this very long. I promise. When I was 13, the year 1975, I was born in late 61. In the summer of 1975, I was raised by Michael Main, Michael T. Main. And Michael T. Main was my dad. He was not my biological father, but he was my dad. My biological father and my mother split up when I was about 2 years old, and my mom moved us to Wisconsin, moved she and myself to Wisconsin. And she met and married Michael T. Main, and I carry his last name because I am proud to call him Dad. Because he took me in as one of his own. I was not his child, but he took me in and adopted me as his own. So he was Dad. And it was great. And when I was, you know, until I was about 13 and a half years old. Well, I didn't know because I was young. But Dad had a psychiatric problem. He had a mental problem. I didn't know this. He did a good job of keeping it very well hidden from me and from my two brothers that came along after me, that were his sons, by the way. He did a good job of keeping it away from us so that we didn't know. But because of activities that he participated in the military, my dad was a veteran. My dad didn't serve in combat, but my dad was a veteran. And he was in the military intelligence unit during Vietnam and during a little bit of the time frame, I think shortly before Vietnam, before our heavy involvement in Vietnam and during some of our involvement in Vietnam. Because of activities there, when he got out, he had a very bad case of PTSD. PTSD is not a new phenomenon, folks. PTSD has been around a long time. So my dad had a pretty bad case of PTSD after serving in the military. And because depression and manic depression, also known today as bipolar, because that got the best of him, my dad in the summer of 1975 committed suicide and took his own life with a gun. So, you know, some people, if that happened to their dad, they would be anti-gun. You know, I have every right to be anti-gun if I wanted to be. But I realized, even at the young age of about 13, a little over 13, even at that young age, I realized it was not the gun. The gun was not what killed my dad. My dad committed suicide, and he used a gun. The gun was the tool. But Dad decided to do that. And he would have figured out another way to do it. if he didn't use a gun. So it doesn't matter, folks. The guns don't do these things on their own. And so my message to anti-gunners, if you happen to be an anti-gun person listening to this, or maybe you're on the fence, you're not really sure if you're for guns or not, take it from me. Take it from me, from someone who lost their dad when they were just 13 and a half years old. That's painful, folks. That's painful. Take it from me that I realized it wasn't the gun. And I never grew up resenting guns or resenting people who own guns and used guns. And here I am today, after 7 years of podcasting nationally and internationally about guns, here I am, an active shooter, a firearms instructor, a podcaster, a Second Amendment advocate. Here I am doing my part to get people to realize the safety, the freedom, and the power you have to save your own life by using a gun. So I didn't become anti-gun. I actually did the opposite, and I became very, very pro-gun. Dad took me hunting a lot before he passed away. My stepdad picked up where he left off. When my mom got remarried after my dad's death, my stepdad was also a sportsman, like my dad was. And he took me hunting a lot. So they kept me around guns. They didn't teach me that guns were a bad thing. What I learned when I was a kid was that mental illness is a bad thing. That mental illness gone untreated, untreated properly, or not properly treated is what I meant to say, it's a bad thing, and it causes people to do bad things. So I said it before, and I'll say it again. The primary problem in many mass shootings, or even non-mass shootings, sometimes the problem is mental illness. We've seen that with a lot of the mass shooters. I'm not talking about the one like recently, the gentleman in Orlando that... Why do I call him a gentleman? He wasn't a gentleman. The terrorist, the jihadi terrorist nutbag in Orlando pledged his allegiance to ISIS. Excuse me. He pledged his allegiance to ISIS and reminded everybody that he was doing this because of jihad. And he was a radical Islamic terrorist. Same with the people in San Bernardino. But some of these people that do these are just mentally ill. So I realized that. So that's what happened to me when I was 13 and a half years old. I don't know if any of you ever knew the full story, if I ever told that story before, if I did, forgive me. But now you know the full story of what happened with my dad. My biological father, by the way, I've reestablished relationship with today. Actually, back when I was 37 years old, I reestablished relationship with him. And it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I'll get to that later. So I had a tough time. I had a tough time in school after my dad did that, and I got bullied a lot, I got picked on a lot, all the way through junior high school, all the way through high school, and part in college. But it was my faith, folks. It was my faith. My parents introduced me to Christianity when I was very young, and thank God that they did that. And I participated in all kinds of extracurricular Christian activities, and my faith sustained me and gave me a sense of worth. Plus, I had a loving home. I had a loving home. My mom was just fantastic, just absolutely fantastic. I owe my mother a debt I'll never be able to repay. My mom hung in there like I still can't believe to this day. I'm almost 55 years old, folks. I can't believe how well my mom did through all those dark days. But because of that, and because my stepfather was a good stepfather, and also was a great, continued to be a great father influence, I turned out okay. I made it through junior high school. I made it through high school. I graduated from Seymour High School in Seymour, Wisconsin, right near Green Bay, in 1979. I went to college, graduated from the University of Wisconsin at Stevens Point in 1984. And I made it through and I got my college degree. Got the diploma on the wall, folks. I wasn't an incredibly good student, but I graduated and I got the degree. And that was a proud day. And after being unemployed out of college for a while, this was back in 1984, and the economy was pretty decent, but I still couldn't find a very good job. The economy in Wisconsin and Minnesota wasn't all that terrific in 84. A friend of mine said, hey, you know what? We can't find a job here. This was a buddy of mine from college. He said, we can't find a job here, but how about we move? And I said, well, what in the world are you talking about, John? And he said, well, my brother is in Phoenix, Arizona, and you got to remember, this was early 1985. He said, my good friend lives, or my brother lives in Arizona, and he says things are booming in Phoenix. So my college buddy and I packed up everything we owned at that time in my Mazda that I was driving at that time, and we drove from Wisconsin to Phoenix, Arizona. We drove from Wisconsin to Phoenix, Arizona. Two young men fresh out of college. We made that drive. We had a lot of fun. It was a good, fun drive. We get to Phoenix, Arizona, and that's where I decided to plant new roots. I found a job within like a month of searching in Phoenix. I actually found a lot of different jobs. I had my pick of I think three different offers, if I remember correctly. And it took me about a month to get those three offers, and I picked one. And folks, that's kind of how my sales career started, because I got my degree in marketing, a business degree with a marketing emphasis from the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. And so I knew by that time, it took me a long time, it took me 5.5 years to get through college, but I finally figured out after 5.5 years of college that some kind of sales and marketing, something to do with sales, marketing, or advertising, that's what I wanted to do. And, of course, my first job, I didn't get that. My first job, I worked at a bank. That was my very first job out of college, my first full-time job out of college. I worked at a bank. I worked at a financial institution. Small one. It was a small, regional finance company, and I didn't like it. I was a collector. I was, folks. I was collecting money. I was calling people up collecting money. I was calling up delinquent accounts. That's the job they gave me. I wasn't making much money at all, folks. I think I was making 18 grand a year. I think that's what it was. And in 1985, that wasn't too bad for a single guy. It was more than paying my bills. Making 18 grand a year as a collector calling up delinquent accounts. I actually got pretty good at it, but after about 7 months, I just couldn't stand it anymore. So, but I sort of figured that was kind of a sales position, because I had to sell people on paying money that they didn't want to pay. I had to talk them into paying money that they didn't want to pay. And we didn't really have much, we didn't have much collateral. We didn't have much of a much leverage against them. So my boss was pretty impressed with how well I did, but I just hated it. So I got my first real sales job in outside sales. That would have been late 85. And it all started then, folks. It all started then. I did okay in my first outside sales job selling copiers and business machines. This was back when fax machines, by the way, were just becoming popular. Can you believe that? Fax machines. This was in 1985 when they were just starting to become pretty popular. They were kind of like the new up-and-coming thing in 1985. Fax machines. Yeah, the, you know, those antiquated machines that nobody uses anymore. And they were thermal paper faxes back then. Thermal, not plain paper. Thermal paper. Remember that stuff? That if you left it on the dashboard of your hot car for too long, it would get all black, and you then you couldn't read what it was about. That's I was selling that in copiers. Well, I got introduced to somebody that convinced me to check out a sales trainer by the name of Tom Hopkins, because I wasn't doing very well. Tom Hopkins. And there was a Tom Hopkins promoter in the Phoenix, Arizona area that had the rights to the entire Western United States for this sales trainer by the name of Tom Hopkins. And my employer sent me to a seminar, a live seminar that Tom Hopkins taught on how to become a better salesperson. And I read the book, How to Master the Art of Selling by Tom Hopkins, one of the best sales books ever written. If you are in sales and you want to improve your skills, read How to Master the Art of Selling by Tom Hopkins. And also The Official Guide to Success by Tom Hopkins. Those two books and those two, at that time, cassette tape series. See how much I'm aging myself? Listening to cassette tapes. Of course, remember now, this was 1985, early 1986. That's all we had in your car that you could play were cassette tapes. Those two series changed my life, and going to his seminar changed my life. And here's how it changed my life in a huge way. About 2 years after I started in sales, I got the opportunity to work for Tom Hopkins. I got the opportunity to work for the promotion company based out of Phoenix that was promoting Tom Hopkins sales training and Tom Hopkins himself. And I thought, wow. And I was on, they hired me on straight commission, folks. Of course, up until that point, all my sales jobs were straight commission. So I was used to it. You know, hey, you know what straight commission sales means? If you sell, you eat. That's the way it is. If you sell, you eat. If you don't sell, you don't eat. If you sell a lot, you eat well. And if you're the best of the best, you eat well, live in a nice house, and have a fun life. That was what I did. And for seven years. I was a straight commission salesperson, and I did extremely well. My first 4.5 years selling Tom Hopkins sales training programs, I was a 25, 26-year-old kid, really, and I was going out and I was giving my own sales seminars. I was speaking to people 2 to 3 times a day. That's where I got my public speaking experience. So if some of you are wondering why I am pretty decent at public speaking, I didn't really have any formal training in public speaking. I've had zero formal training classes. I just went out and I learned by doing. I learned at the School of Hard Knocks, folks. I made a lot of bad speeches, and I made a lot of good speeches. And every time I made a good speech, I sold a lot of tickets and a lot of tape series for Tom Hopkins. And every time I made a bad speech, I didn't eat. So I learned pretty quickly how to make a good speech and how to motivate people and how to talk to people. And, of course, I was a student of the training. I was selling training, but I was also a student of the training. This is why, if you want to be a firearms instructor, this is why I always say, be a student of your craft as well. Don't just decide you're only going to be an instructor. You have to be a student all the time. You know, it's kind of like the theme of Paul Markle at Student of the Gun Radio, a great podcast you should listen to. I listen to it often. You know, he says, you're a beginner once, but you're a student for life. And that's true. And I realized as a young man that I was going to be a student for life, a sales student for life. And I still am. Still to this day, it's my 30th year in sales and marketing. But even after 30 years, I'm still learning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm still learning. I had a chance last year to go to a 2-day sales seminar, and I loved it. I loved it. I went to my company, my employer sent me to a two-day sales training class, and I loved it. Even after 30 years of doing this, I learned a tremendous amount. Because I've always said, I believe your mind is like a parachute. It works best when it's open. You've got to have an open mind, folks, and you always have to be a sponge and a thirst for knowledge. So I lived the training that I taught. I did that until 1993. I did that till from 86 to 1993, about 7.5 years. I did so well the first 4.5 years, they promoted me to management, and I ran the entire West Coast for Tom Hopkins. I was the West Coast, the entire Western U.S. sales manager. I had pretty much everything west of, everything from Colorado to the west, and I was living in Phoenix, Arizona. And I just got tired of the traveling. I was on the road all the time. I was on the road probably 40 weeks a year. It was ridiculous. But I was single. I didn't have a family. What did I care? It was a lot of fun. I experienced and did some things, folks, and I got some great training that very, very, very few people in life ever get. And I experienced some things as a young man in my late 20s and early 30s. And so that's where a lot of my experience comes from. And I had a lot of successes, and I had a lot of failures. A lot of failures, folks. I went broke several times. Never declared bankruptcy, but I went broke. I went broke several times. I was left with nothing. Two or three times. You know, I think everybody needs to go through that. I really do. You might say, Bob, what? What are you talking about? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You need to have at least one experience in life that leaves you with nothing. You know why? Because it makes you appreciate what you do have when you get it all back. And let me tell you something. Somebody who is good at what they do, somebody who has a great attitude and is well-trained, and someone who's grounded in faith, they'll get it back. If they're left with nothing, guess what? They'll get it back. It's all about your faith, your attitude, and your work ethic. Faith, attitude, and work ethic. Those are the three keys, folks. Faith, attitude, and work ethic. You'll get it all back, and you'll appreciate it more because you know what it was like to be with nothing. And that happened to me more than once. I'll give you some more details some other time when I have more time. See, I don't mind talking about my failures or my successes. I don't like to talk about me very much. I really don't. Kind of makes me feel a little self-conscious at times. I really don't like to talk about me all that much. But I did promise to some listeners who asked, and I made a promise several weeks back that I would tell you a little bit more about my history so you know where I'm coming from and where I've been. So in 1993, I met my wife in early of 1993, and that was it. I decided I was done with 40 weeks a year of travel. I was done. That was it. So I met my wife in early 93. We got married in November of 93, coming up on 23 years of marriage this November. And our son was born in March of 1998. And even after getting married, like most new married couples, we found ourselves occasionally, once again, with nothing. Or very little, but we got through it. We got through it. Something I forgot to mention, I don't know how I forgot this, but now I remembered it. In 1985... shortly before I started working for Tom Hopkins, I lost my grandmother, and my grandmother was like a second mother to me. My grandmother was also another person who was there during the bad times after my dad died. She moved in with us for a little while, and then she lived 5 miles away from us for a long time as well. And she was there, my beloved grandmother, who I love so much, was like a second mother to me. And my grandmother was the epitome of unconditional love. Just, I mean, my grandmother taught me what unconditional love was all about. So did my mom. My grandmother was huge. I lost her in 1985, in November of 1985, shortly before my career with Tom Hopkins. And I guess I kind of wanted to prove, because my grandmother always taught me I was worth something, no matter how bad life was. No matter how bad life was for me, having to deal with the death of my dad, having to deal with all the bullying, the terrible, awful, awful bullying that I went through. My grandmother always told me I was worth something. And my mother did too, both of them. Told me I was worth something and that I was a good person. That motivated me, folks. So I guess I felt like I was obligated to fulfill what my grandmother told me about me, that I was worth something. And that my mother told me the same thing, I was worth something. So forget all those bullies. And I guess I set out to prove the bullies too. You know, I was talking to somebody and was asking me a couple years back what motivates me. And I never really realized it until a few years ago, but I was out to prove all the bullies wrong. All the bullies and the people that made fun of me and told me I was worth nothing. I was out to prove them wrong. And I think that's one of the reasons why I got so motivated to be so successful. Because I wanted to basically shove it up there you know what. And the best way I could do that, because I didn't see them anymore. I didn't see those bullies anymore that I dealt with in high school and in college. Because I had gone off and done my own thing. But my way to get back at them was to go out and be a success. And that's exactly what I strived for. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you something. You know what the best revenge is? If there's somebody that you want to get revenge against, the best revenge you can get is living well. That's right. Best revenge is living well. God says, vengeance is mine. So leave that kind of revenge to God. You just go out and live well, okay? And I'm a testimony to that. You just go out and have the best life that you can have. That's your best revenge. You do not let anybody who tells you that you're not worth anything, don't let them succeed. That's your best revenge. Don't let them succeed in making you think that you're worth nothing. Don't make them correct by being nothing. Go out and live well. And it doesn't mean that you have to do something like I do and start a podcast and have several thousand listeners and a real successful sales career. Because let me tell you what, folks, I've had just as many downs as ups. It doesn't mean you have to do that. Just have a good life. And part of it is not believing in your mind and your heart and your soul that you're worth nothing like the people who abused you. All right? So there. That's my 2 minutes of counseling. All right. So, fast forward. Got several jobs with major corporations, manufacturers, service companies, pretty much in the security electronics field since 1998. I spent a little bit of time in the personnel business as a sales rep and as a branch manager. I've also managed people twice. I've managed a lot of people. One of my sales and marketing positions, one of my sales jobs, I got so successful as a sales job, they promoted me to sales manager. This was with a security services company, a home and commercial security services company, a big one. And then I did real well as a sales manager, motivating and teaching people. They promoted me, they moved me up to Chicago. And I was over three offices and 182 people. And here I was, a Green Bay Packer fan in Chicago. That was tough. Man, that was tough. Whew, but I made it. And it's almost as bad being a Packer fan in Texas, but not quite. Not quite as bad as being a Packer fan in Chicago. But anyway, I did real well at that. Long story short, I wanted to come back to Texas. And the company got bought out, merged and stuff. Things were going south. So I jumped on another sales opportunity that gave us the opportunity to move back to Texas. And that's what I did. We spent a little bit of time. We spent about three, my wife and I spent a little about 3.5 years, almost 4 years in Oklahoma. Another long story I'll tell you about sometimes. But to all my listeners in Oklahoma, my friends from Oklahoma that listen to this show, because I know there are some of you. Hi, Randy. How you doing? I haven't talked to you in a long time. You need to call me sometime, Randy. And I miss you, buddy. Let's talk. Let's get caught up. So to my friends in Oklahoma that maybe I've never met you personally, some of you I have. I used to live in your state almost 4 years. My wife is from Oklahoma. So we did the living near relatives thing for a while. And I didn't enjoy living near my in-laws very much. Go figure. But we've been in Texas pretty much full time since 93, except for about 4 years. So that's the story, folks. Today I work for a manufacturer of hotel security products and got myself financially pretty squared away. Many of you know I'm a big believer in Dave Ramsey. He's the author of a book, Total Money Makeover, which changed my financial life back in 2006. Been following Dave Ramsey's financial program since 2006. Excellent Christian-based financial program. Even if you're not a Christian, follow Dave Ramsey's financial program. We have no debt except for our house. I do carry a little bit of a balance on credit cards because it's mostly business expenses. And I have a little bit of a dental bill because I wanted to preserve my savings account. Not quite sure if that was a great move or not. Probably not something that Dave Ramsey would have suggested, but got a little bit of that and a little bit on a credit card of some miscellaneous purchases. But none of what I have, all the money that I have on my one credit card and one charge card, I can pay off at the end of this month if I want to. I can pay it off at any time if I want to. And I plan on doing that. At the end of July, they're going to get payoff checks from me. So the only debt we have is on the house. I don't carry car payments. I don't carry thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of credit card debt that some people never, hardly ever get paid off. We don't do that. Everything we own, we own. We've paid for. Paid cash for. And that's simply through hard work, folks. Through hard work and getting disciplined. It took us about 3 years on the Dave Ramsey financial plan to get to that level, to where we had wiped out all of our debt but our house. And it's my goal to pay off the house I live in before the end of the life of the mortgage. That's my goal. And unless there's a really compelling reason to get out of San Antonio and sell the house that we live in, I'm not going to do it. I'll be there until I retire or until the good Lord calls me home. That's a little bit about Bob Main. Hopefully I didn't make that too long. So if you got any questions, I'd be happy to address some more questions. I don't mind you asking questions about me personally. Some people don't like that. I don't mind. If there's something I don't want to share with you, I'm not going to share with you. And there's some things I haven't shared with you that I, because this is public, I probably will never share with you. I might if we have a chance to talk one-on-one when there's not thousands of ears listening, I may tell you. I'm a pretty open guy. There's most things I don't mind about me talking about because it kind of helps me. It helps me, too, to talk about this stuff. You know what? Just talking about all this stuff about me during this intermission has already helped me. So thank you for the opportunity. All right. Now, just a quick sound effect or something like that, and back to the interview, this time on the way home from the range. And also, if you make a purchase on Amazon, would you please use my Amazon store? I'd appreciate that. Amazon pays me a fee. I'm an Amazon affiliate. So go to handgunworld.com, click the Amazon store, just those two steps before you make your Amazon purchases, and I'd appreciate that. How do you conceal an AR-15 in a public area? In other words, like let's say you're going into a hotel room, or you're going camping or whatever, or you're going someplace where you're allowed to have it, but you want to keep it concealed, but you want to carry it around. Well, I may have found the answer, at least for me. I bought a new AR-15 bag. It's a backpack carry case made by Colt. It's a sling pack. It's called the sling pack backpack for an AR-15 made by Colt. And it's very discreet. It's very discreet. I took the Colt sticker off of it, so it's not a dead giveaway as to what I've got in there. But I really, really like it. It's a great discreet way to carry an AR-15 concealed. And, you know, for me that travels around a lot, when I'm driving and I'm staying in a hotel, that's going with me. Well, let me tell you, last night I checked into a hotel, and I had that thing slung over my back, and, you know, folks, it does not look like a rifle case. It looks like a big guitar case or a big tennis racket case or something like that. I walked up to the front desk, said, "Hi, how you doing?" I had already checked into my room, went out to my car to get my AR-15, came in with that thing slung over my back. I said, "Hey, how you doing?" They just waved at me and smiled. They never suspected anything. I could tell by the look on the face, on their faces. They didn't know at the front desk of that hotel what I had in that backpack. Couldn't tell at all. So it's going to work out real well. And if you want to see a review of the sling pack backpack that I use for my AR-15, if you are a member of our Shooters Club for only $8 a month or $75 a year, I just did a nice video review on it. And I promise that I'm going to come back and do a second review after I've carried this for 2 or 3 months. That's what I like to do, is I like to do a first impressions video, and then I like to do a full review after I've used the product for a while. That's the way I like to do things. So if you're a member of the Shooters Club, check it out. It's the most recent video that I put up there. Again, if you're not a member of the Shooters Club, hey, $8 a month. That's not much money. $8 a month? Come on. You want to save some money, get a whole year membership? It's $75. If you renew after the first year, it's only $50. And there are now 56 videos, including my most recent review of my new AR-15 backpack that I think you are going to like. Just go to the Shooters Club page at handgunworld.com. And I want to tell all you Shooters Club members, the password is changing at the end of July, so you need to check your emails to get the new password on August 1st, because it's changing at the end of July. Also, don't forget about the advanced class, Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced. I'm teaching it September 17th in San Antonio. If you're a graduate of the Beyond Concealed Carry classes that Ben and I teach, or even if you've taken any real training class, as long as you're not a beginner, and as long as this isn't your first class, you can come to the advanced class, Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced. It's only one day, Saturday, September 17th in San Antonio. Check that out. Signups have already started. I'm teaching the class myself. I promise to keep it a pretty small group so that the students get the best experience possible. So check that out The weather should be pretty nice in San Antonio, middle of September. Well, let's get back to the second half of my mixed bag discussion with Ben Branham.
It was one of the worst mass murders committed by a single person. It happened down south. A lunatic killed 27 people, including his own mother, in a single pass. The killer used a six-shot revolver and a knife. Mass murderers find whatever tools they need, and those tools don't need to be sporting rifles or high-capacity clips. A slow, reloading revolver is all this fellow needed. Banning clips will not prevent a madman's massacre. But that doesn't matter to the gun control industry, who thinks inanimate objects are evil, but ignore the deranged people who misuse them. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, so on the way home from the range, after shooting AASA on the 4th of July, Ben's back in the car. How did it go, Ben?
Through the magic of podcasting, it's been like 4 hours for us. You, it's been 2 seconds?
Yeah, probably 20 seconds.
No, I didn't shoot very well at all. I shot horribly. But I was running my new Timberwolf clock, which I thought would be a lot of fun. You talked me into it. I brought it for some reason. I was actually going to do training today, and then I had that Glock with me, and you're like, oh, you should shoot it. I'm like, I haven't shot a competition with it. What the heck?
What do you think? How do you like it?
It ran pretty good. I can't fault the gun. It was shooter error, all that stuff. But the trigger is substantially lighter than the carry trigger I'm used to on my M&P. And I should have played with those sights more. I would have had a way better showing if I actually played with the gun last night and prepared for today.
Yeah.
But just picking it up, because I'm running the speed sights on that, which I absolutely love.
I love them, too.
But the first stage, and I picked them up, they don't look the same as the TFOs that I'm used to.
No, they don't.
They're very, very different with that diamond and the dots and the colors. So I haven't shot those in a year or something. So it was really weird for me to try to pick up, and I'm going to officially blame it on the new gun is why I shot so badly today.
Ah, it's the new gun's fault.
Oh, it's got to be the gun's fault. It couldn't have been me. I mean,
no,
I shoot too well.
No, it couldn't have been you, no. But there is a little bit to be said about that. When you're trying something new that you're not used to, it takes a while to get used to it.
And our squad was pretty decent, minus the one new shooter and the one guy that was the outlier that was just making us all look dumb.
And the young girl that couldn't get her 22 pistol to work.
She was a new shooter. So the new shooter.
Yeah, but even though she was new, her 22 was terrible.
That was Dad's ammo, Dad's magazines, Dad set up the gun for her, and Dad, well, you can kind of think of what Dad did to her. He didn't laugh at her, which was nice, but we all felt bad for her.
Yeah.
But well, she seemed to have a good time.
So you liked your Timberwolf.
Yeah, I did.
For people who don't know what a Timberwolf Glock is, why don't you explain to them real quick?
So Lone Wolf Distributors makes the Timberwolf frame, and it's a different frame for a Glock. They're still injection molded, but they did the replaceable backstrap before Glock did. They did a tail on the back, which helps me out a lot, so I don't get... It's a big beaver tail, like a 1911,
yes.
And then it's got more of a 1911 grip angle to it. It still has the finger grips, which I don't like.
You can take those off.
And then it's got a different kind of dust cover and a little different trigger guard. And I thought the trigger guard would be undercut more, because that's the one thing we all do to our Glocks, right? Undercut that trigger guard so it doesn't get Glock knuckle. Well, I still got Glock knuckle today. But the gun ran great. I had a lot of fun. And then to get that gun, though, all I did was order the stripped frame, nothing in it, not even the magazine the magazine release spring, which was a pain in the butt to get out and get back in, by the way.
Yeah.
But, so I put all the innards from my old Gen 3 that's probably got like 35,000 rounds in it somewhere in there when I was shooting a lot of competitions, and I just dropped it all inside there and said, what the heck? Well, let's see how it runs. And I originally was going to set it up like a carry gun, so I had all carry parts in there. I actually had the minus disconnect spring from Ghost, the minus disconnect, which is 3.5 pound disconnector from Ghost, and I put the New York 1 trigger return spring in there, so yeah. I get that nice 5.5, 6.5 break. And then I hated it.
Yeah.
I hated it. I dry fired it
at the shop and didn't like it.
So I took out, I had another spring lying around, and I had another set of Ghost parts lying around. So I really put a Ghost trigger kit in there because I had them all lying around, and now that it's super light. And maybe too light. It's too light for Carrie, and it may be too light for me unless I'm going to really practice with it. But I don't think that was really my problem today. But, you know, I'm going to blame it on that.
Yeah, you got a good convenient way to blame it on. Well, yeah, and, you know, I shot fairly well. I had one real bad stage where I had a brain fart and just didn't shoot it right. And by the time I shot it right, 26 seconds had gone by or something.
Yeah, he's reminding you, okay, shoot that target.
Yeah.
Now shoot that target. Don't forget that one. And one more. Come on, you can do it.
But it was five stages, and I shot the first three with my G19, my third-gen G19 that I've had Chris France at Citadel Armory do the grip on that. And then I whipped out my Sig Legion because we had a couple of stages that I didn't need a holster for, and I don't have a holster for that yet. Jason, I know you're listening. I'll be ordering a holster soon. So anyway, I really like that Sig Legion. I really do. You know, when I first shot it, I thought it was shooting left, and it was Bob shooting left, not the gun.
Bob is trying to shoot his Sig Legion like he shoots his Glock.
And I can't do that.
Little different animal.
It's a little different animal, yes. So there were a couple of really small steel targets, and I was probably standing about 10 yards away. Little tiny, the top of the little tiny steel targets. And I just took my time and laid the front sight on it, and bang, I hit it. So the gun's fine, as long as Bob Main's fine. But I really, hey, I'll tell you what. I like that Sig Legion. I really, really do. I can see that being my carry gun.
We're going to make him get rid of his Glocks and start carrying
Sigs. No, you're not going to make me get rid of my Glocks.
Sig, carry the Sig,
Well, the only negative I have of the Sig Legion, the only negative is it's heavy. It's heavy. Once I put 16 rounds of 9mm in that steel aluminum gun, it's heavy.
It is a lot heavier than your Glock, and it's a little bulkier, too. They're kind of fat.
I actually like it. My hand fits that pretty well.
But I mean, the gun overall, width of the gun is a lot thicker than the Glock.
But let me tell you, the single action trigger on that thing is phenomenal.
If you do your job with that Sig, that thing, it can rock.
Oh, man. And you know what? I was shooting it fast. Matter of fact, I was shooting it faster. Ben, did you get a video of that real fast shooting steel stage?
Yeah, I think so. The one that I totally chunked and the one
that you
did really well.
Did you get a video of me on that?
I think so.
Okay, I was shooting my Legion on that.
So Bob shot it like an expert pro, looked like a stud doing it. No misses, straight through. One, two, three, four. Five targets. You got to hit them four times each.
Yep.
Four big pieces of steel and one smaller, about half the size steel.
If you got that video, send it to me.
I will, but
I'll
was
put
totally
it on Facebook so people can see it.
You totally cleaned it. It looked great. Me, I'm like, let's go fast. And I went fast for the first two big targets, and then I hit that small target in the center, and the problem is I didn't hit it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, when I got this this Sig from your shop, you know, I told people here on the podcast, I said, I want to get good at shooting a double-action, single-action gun. And this is probably the ultimate double-action, single-action to own because the trigger is so good. Even the double action trigger is so good on it. It versus a conventional Sig, there's no comparison.
They're going to get good. I forget they have a special adjustable trigger that they're putting in there.
No, it's kind of an adjustable trigger.
Yeah.
But all that does is adjust the
overstop. But it's a different trigger than they're putting in all their other guns.
Yes.
I mean, it's
supposedly it's been worked over by Bruce Gray.
It's a Bruce Gray tactical trigger.
Gray Gun's a short reset trigger.
They've been, and somebody at the factory is polishing them because every one we get in the shop is a little different.
Yeah.
Let's put them side by side. They're not exactly the same, and it's not like Glock the same. Somebody's polishing them a little bit. So a couple different guys polishing them a little different. They just feel a hair different. But
and I don't know what it is about this Legion, but you know it does sit higher in my hand. It's a higher bore axis, but it doesn't feel like it. I don't notice the high, like with my Walther PPQ. That's one of the things I don't like. Is that thing has a lot of muzzle flip. That thing, you know, sits high in my hand, and it flips a lot. The Sig doesn't. Maybe it's the weight.
Yeah, it's going to be the weight of the gun, and then it's the R frame, so it has the rail. The rail sits out, puts a little more weight out the front of the gun. They're exceptionally well balanced.
Yeah. The 229 is. I don't like the 226.
Yeah, I'm a completely opposite. I'd rather have the 226 than the 229.
Yeah.
I want the extra barrel and the extra on that one. Heck, I want the extra everything. You got the 226 TACOPS. It's even a bigger gun. I want that one.
Yeah, that doesn't have the sweet trigger, but it's still a good gun.
It's still got the short reset factory trigger, which
SRT
is pretty
trigger,
good.
Yeah.
All I got to do is come up with the $1,200 for it or whatever it is, $1,100.
Yeah, you know, they're not cheap, but oh well. This is my fun in life, you know. So I pay. You know, hey, some people ride motorcycles, some people have sports cars, some people golf three times a week. I shoot.
I think the guns are cheaper than your motorcycle.
Yeah, but, you know, shooting is about... I used to golf a lot. Shooting is just as expensive as golf.
Oh, I'm sure, but, you know, guys get motorcycles, and you got to get the Harley, and it's $25,000.
Yikes.
And then they start adding stuff to it, and it's just like, well, but I'm saving gas when I take it to work once a week.
Yeah. All right, so we talked about our match. We talked about our guns. Let's shift gears a little bit. You probably didn't expect that I was going to ask this, but I'm not going to put you on the spot too much, but I haven't heard you talk about the Orlando terrorist attack. Give us your thoughts about that.
Somebody shoot him faster, please. I don't know what to say. And the whole, it was in the gay and lesbian community and everything. We're all people, and that's what I care about.
Amen.
And this was a soft target. It was a non-military target. It was a civilian target. And that's just wrong.
He's a coward. And or was a coward.
I was talking a little bit on one of my podcasts, and I was like, and I talked to some people, and I was like, I wish like half of those people in there would have been listening to my podcast, or even a quarter of them, because they would have jumped on him and just ripped him limb from limb. Somebody would have stepped on his head until he quit moving. And that's kind of what he deserved. And doing that, it's like there's no way the body count could have been higher. We got the terrorist attack that just happened in Turkey with three gunners, suicide vest, three rifles, full auto rifles, and the body count was still less than what happened in Orlando. And Orlando is just one of those nightmares, and it could get way worse. And we just need people that are going to stand up and just not take this crap. So
that's the thing, yeah. And even though it was in a gun-free zone, it doesn't mean that just because you're in a gun-free zone that you don't have a way that you can fight back.
Yeah, and then the whole sex, gender, and everything, and some people were making fun of, it was a gay and lesbian community, so they're all a bunch of little girls running around and stuff. No, it doesn't matter who you are, what's your station in life, what job you do, you have it in you to protect yourself.
Exactly.
You just need to think about it a little bit, train a little bit, and get that mindset that, hey, I'm going to do something about it. I'm not going to let some guy usher me into the bathroom to hold me as hostages after he's killed gosh knows how many people that are laying on the floor, and he's walking around texting on his phone, killing people he's going. I mean, jump up there and rip his freaking head off. Take your pen, shove it in his eye, and push it all the way in until it stops the back. I don't know.
Even if 20 or 30 people had that mentality that you just described,
they could have taken one or two.
Exactly.
And when the guys are walking around like that, they're not paying attention, especially if he's on his dang phone.
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen people drive on their phone. Do they notice anything? No. If he's texting on his phone,
unfortunately not.
Jump up, run across, and just blindside him.
Right. But he knew that he was not going to get that kind of resistance in a place like that.
Well, and there's all sorts of things going around, and I want to see this is one of the ones that I'm going to want to see the law enforcement report on, even though it's going to be 100 pages long. But there's all sorts of reports that he was a security guard there, that he had been dating some other guys there, and so this whole the whole thing that he saw two guys kissing and it made him mad is just there's a lot more deeper hate and disregard and all sorts of nasty stuff.
Well, the thing is, let's make no mistake about it. The guy was pledging allegiance to ISIS and praising Allah while he was doing it. This was a radical Islamic terrorist attack.
Well,
and I'm very politically incorrect and proud of it. And that's exactly what this was. So don't you think, Ben, that's what we're up against?
Well, and not only that, this is more than that. It's this we're breeding hate and discontent. His father was almost spitting on people that were gay. So if he was gay, he couldn't come out to his father about it, and that bred more discontent and hate for what he felt like he was inside and all the psychology problems. So I think it's more than just an ISIS-inspired terrorist attack.
Right.
But I do think we're going to see more ISIS attacks. We're going to see more ISIS-inspired terrorist attacks, more lone wolf-like stuff like this. And if we start getting more stuff like that happened in Turkey that are becoming more and more coordinated with more than one gunner, with more than one bomb, it just could get really bad. And you want to know how bad it could get? Go ahead and go look at the Breslin School Massacre. Just look up that terrorist attack. You want to see how bad it could get? Well, that is how bad it could get. There was like 300 dead, and most of them were kids.
Yeah.
The terrorists took over an elementary school and started executing elementary kids.
Where was it?
Breslin. It's they were Chechenian separatists officially, but they weren't ISIS terrorists, but they were Islamic terrorists. So if you want to see how bad it can get, that's how bad it can get. We don't want it to get that bad. And there's all these problems in law enforcement. I can't fault you guys. There was a cop there at an off-duty, or he was the security guard there at this Orlando club. And, man, I wish he could have ended it right there and killed the guy.
Yeah.
You know, some reports say they exchanged gunfire. Some reports say that he couldn't get in there. I don't know what happened. I do wish that he had been able to get in there and put this. It's by that time when a terrorist starts acting like that, he is a rabid dog, and there's only one thing you can do is put him down.
Well, and you know, let me pick up on that. You said the only thing you can do is put him down. You know, I said this. I put this on Facebook. I don't know if I said it on my podcast. That terrorist attack was started by a bad guy with a gun. And that terrorist attack was ended by a good guy with a gun.
Lots of good guys with guns.
Lots of good guys with guns. So it always ends when the good guy with a gun shows up. Well, why can't the good guys with a gun be the patrons at the club?
You know,
that's the problem, because we've created a gun-free zone.
Well, and then we allow ourselves to do it, too. I saw one report that they were doing pat-downs on the way in. It's a gun-free zone.
Yeah.
It's marked no guns. It's against Florida law. And then you have a security guard with a wand patting everybody down saying, no, you can't do it.
Right.
So what do all us good people do? You know, because I will sneak guns into places that says you're not supposed to have a gun. If it doesn't carry the weight of law, I don't really care. So
but if there's a security guard patting you down,
he's
going to send you home if he finds a gun.
Yeah, and then there's ways around most of that stuff, and I've slipped stuff into different places. But yeah, and most of us, what do? If he's got a, you know, we may be going up there and we go in and it's marked gun free zone, and you kind of don't see what's going on. Your gun, as one guy I heard say, his gun can't read.
Yeah,
but then when they're wanting people and patting people down, it's hard to hide that one. And
yeah,
so,
it's hard to hide that, and you know.
And then you plan that stuff, and if you're like me, you're paranoid to leave your gun in the car. So then you leave your gun at home, so you can't even run out into the parking lot and get it in your car because you're afraid somebody's going to steal it out of your car. And it just it's the one bad thing. It just, you've got to plan for this stuff. If you're going to go drink, tonight's July 4th, and I will be quite upfront. I'm going to put the gun in the car, lock it in the car. We're going to go with the kids. I'm going to sit down with my buddies, and I'm going to have a cigar, put my feet up, and I'm going to drink probably more than I should. But my wife doesn't drink, and she's going to drive home.
Leave the gun at home.
And I'm going to, leave the gun. The gun's going to stay in the car in case we get stuck there overnight. But I'm going to lock it in the car. It's not going to come out.
Unload it.
Unload. It's going to be, I lock it in a lockbox in the car, but I'm not going to touch it. Once I start drinking, I don't touch my guns. That's the way it is. They are locked away. I don't touch them when I'm drinking until I have a sleep cycle. So, but I'm making that choice.
Right.
I'm going to make that choice to let it go. But you got to, as carriers, we got to make that choice up front. And you know what? Some of us need to make the choice, and I've done it before when I go out with my Marines, that, okay, I am the one that's going to be responsible tonight. I am the one that's not going to be drinking. I'm the one that's going to carry my gun, and I'm the one that's going to take care of all my friends, my family. I'm going to take care of everybody.
Yeah.
And it's not very often that I do the drinking thing, but, you know, America's birthday, really. Okay, I'll tell everybody the secret. There's two times that I really drink. America's birthday and the Marine Corps birthday.
Yeah.
Not even my own birthday. Everything else, you know, those are the only times that it just seems like I should be raising a glass to all those that have come before me and all those that are fighting right now.
Absolutely.
And so I do that, absolutely, and I partake. But I'll leave them at home. So plan that. If you're going to go out, I mean, Bob, if you and I were going to go out and you say, hey, I'm going to drink a bunch. Okay, well, why don't you have a beer? I'll drive, and I'll carry the gun. And I'll take responsibility for us. But we just don't plan well enough, and we leave all our guns at home. We all go drinking together, and then what's the off chance that I'm going to be involved in a terrorist attack July 4th at my friend's house in the middle of nowhere in this little city he lives in north of San Antonio?
If you're playing the odds, I'd say the odds are pretty well in your favor.
I'll probably get away with it, right?
Yeah, me too. But going to a friend's house as soon as I get home. I'm not going to drink anything, but as soon as I get home, I'm going to gather my family, and we're going to go to a friend's house and barbecue, shoot off fireworks, do a little fishing, stuff like that.
And then for this Orlando club, let me go the other way, though. I can't get the acronym straight, and I'm sorry if you're in that community and I screw up your acronym.
LGBT.
LGBT. You guys out there, let me talk to you guys that do that or in that or thinking about it or see that. Man, those people, you guys in that community, you're a target just because of who you are.
That's right.
I don't think it's right. I don't think it's... I think I would stand up for you and give my life to help you guys. Because you're a person. And people, you're a person first and everything else is second. You're a person. But you guys, there's other people out there that don't see it that way. And they just get drunk or they get stupid and they just want to kill you because of what club you're hanging out at or how you're dressed or what you look like or their perception of you, completely and utterly wrong. And those people should be probably put in jail and not let out if they're going to kill you for what you look like. But again, they're the same way as a terrorist. You can't tell until they act. And you guys in that community, you know more than I could ever explain to you what kind of dangers you face just being in public with the wrong person seeing you. It's kind of like, I don't know, Jewish people too, right up there. I don't understand how you could be anti-gun and not want to carry a gun with all the things that happened to you in history. Holy crap.
And it is amazing how many of them are very liberal and very anti-gun.
Same thing with the LGBT community. They're just very liberal, which I understand because they want to have the same rights as everybody else. And I don't think it should matter. You can, whatever. Anyways, I won't even go there because I don't care. You're a person first. You're an American second if you live in America. That's it. That's all I see. I mean, you're a person, an American, or you're a person, a citizen of the world. I don't care what your color is. I don't care what your religion is. I don't care what your creed is. I don't care what you call yourself or what you do in the bedroom behind closed doors with some other adult. You're a person. So please protect yourself. Get some training. You can't get it to me and Bob. Go somewhere else. Get some training. Yeah. Get that mindset that you're going to protect yourself. If you're in that nightclub and some jerk-off comes in or a group of jerk-offs comes in and just wants to beat up some gay people because they're dumb rednecks that want to beat up gay people, stand up and take care of business.
Well, I think that goes for anybody, Ben. It doesn't matter what, you know, your affiliation is or what your sexual orientation is or anything. It goes for anybody. You got to stand up for yourself. We're on our own, folks. You know, Tom Gresham at Gun Talk says it all the time. We are on our own. Michael Bain just did a real good podcast at Downrange Radio about it. You're on your own.
For the first 5 to 15 minutes, you are on your own.
Exactly.
Nobody's going to help you.
Exactly.
In the Orlando, it was 3 hours until the law enforcement broke down that door and went in.
People got to stop thinking that help is on the way. Help is not on the way.
It's on the way.
Well, it's on the way, but by the time it gets there, it's of no good.
3 hours.
Even if it's 5 minutes.
3 hours.
Even if it's 5 minutes, the help is no good.
Hey, well, there was other people in that club that were still there that the police officer actually, they saved some people. It took them 3 hours. And in the meantime, 50 people were killed and another 80 or something were injured. I think it was 50-something was injured.
So if you don't want to be one of those 50, you're on your own.
You're going to, if you just take it as you're on your own, I need to take care of myself, you won't be one of those people. And then, I don't know, if all of us thought that way, we're on our own and we need to take care of ourselves. Do you know how many mass shootings there would be? None. Because nobody, the body count would never get high enough to be actually considered a mass shooting. As soon as that guy pulled out his rifle and started shooting people, he might get one or two people shot before everybody, you know, just 15 people pull their guns and shoot them.
So I think the problem is mostly a mindset problem.
Oh, yes.
That's the problem. You know, the anti-gunners are trying to make it a gun problem. And some people are trying to make it a terrorist problem. Well, it is a terrorist problem. But even more so than a terrorist problem, it's a mindset problem. Victims don't have the right mindset. And that's why they're a victim.
If we stood up and killed every terrorist right when he started to act, and then they didn't have anything besides everybody giving the guys that stopped the terrorist attack a high five, they would try another tactic because that doesn't work for them. That's
just
not
like
helping them.
When I had Dr. John Adine on a couple weeks ago, just like what we talked about, you know, John brought up a great point. There's 300 people in the club, and if each person weighs about 150 pounds or a little more, that's 15,000 pounds of humanity that's rushing this nut. And, okay, let's say not all 300. Let's say there's only 20 people. Even if 20 people started rushing this guy, I don't think he would have had a chance to kill 50.
Yeah, anyone, ever. If you're in that situation, use some tactical patience, look around, set an ambush for this guy if you're not shot right away. If you're on top of him and he's on top of you and he's within touching distance, you just need to reach out, grab him, grab the gun, and just fight for your life.
Exactly.
And I'm going to put this out on your podcast first because I was reading in a book. And that it's a great book called Left of Bang, and they talk about Left of Bang. About how soldiers should think in there and how civilians should think. Well, soldiers always thinking fight first and then everything else second, and then we're like, oh, well, as it should be fight last as a civilian and everything else first. No, when something happens, your first question should be, do I need to fight, yes or no? It's a yes or no question.
That's right.
If there's another option, take it. But you need to be looking for that if something goes down, that I'm going to have to fight for my life first. So if you hear pop, 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 and you look over and the guy next to you has a rifle, he's standing next to you. You need to fight.
It's time
you
to
can't
fight.
Run.
Yeah,
and you got to start thinking that if something bad happens, my first reaction is I got to fight. And then if there's nobody standing right next to me to fight because the bad guy's not there, then I'm going to escape. And then after that, I'm going to hide. And then if you decide you're going to fight, after that, set an ambush for the guy.
Right.
Wait, lie in wait. I mean, it's an amazing tactic. Let the guy walk by you and then use your pen and stab him in the throat.
From behind.
Yeah, or drag him down from behind and knee drop him on his head. You know, start jumping up and down on his face. Whatever. Grab him from behind and pull him down. If you get somebody from behind, it is so hard for them to defend themselves.
Well, and you think about it. If 20 people would have rushed this guy from the front and the back and the side or whatever and taken this guy down to the ground, how likely is he to be able to do any shooting or killing in that situation?
He may have got a couple shots off and a couple people would have gotten hurt. But it would have. I could bet my life that it would be less than 50.
Exactly.
So and I would bet my life on that, which means I would rush them.
But you see, that's a mindset that, quite frankly, I don't think that this country is going to get to that mindset enough because of the way that people have been raised.
It's sad. We're going back to that. It's a victim mentality and a little political here. I'm seeing that come out of the military now where it's gimme, 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 you owe me for whatever. But yeah, how do we get from two generations, or what is it, three generations, I have but one life to give for my country to, you know, you owe me?
Well, that was probably about about 10 generations ago, but still, well, no.
And Kennedy not asked.
Back in the 1700s.
The other way, Kennedy asked not what I can do for my country, or asked not what the country can do for me, but what I can do from it. How do we get so far off of that stuff when people were. We need to get back to that. In military,
well, yes.
I've seen
and
that. No gimme, gimme, gimme. Stand up.
And this is it's a mindset and it's an education challenge.
Yeah. Stand up, go make a living, go fight for yourself, stand up and take care of business, whatever is going on.
I'll tell you, let's close with this. I think that what we need to start doing, we as gun carriers and people that believe in protecting ourselves and taking our own responsibility and being on our own, we need to start educating people as nicely, as cleverly as we can, that the answer is not calling 911 and waiting for help. That's not the answer. You know, and even if you don't carry a gun, that's still not the answer. Calling 911 and waiting however long it takes for the police to get there is not the answer.
Oh, please,
the answer is learning how to fight and defend yourself with even what you have. I mean, hey, you can buy a tactical pen, and you can carry a tactical pen into a gun-free zone.
And on a plane.
Most of the time, you can carry a knife into a gun-free zone. You can carry a flashlight that you can also use for defensive purposes in a gun-free zone.
Yeah, we've been bred into that 911 is your answer. Call 911.
It's not.
It's not. 911 is to get help when you've got the scene stabilized.
Exactly.
When you've got somebody that's bleeding out, you've got them stabilized. You've got you got somebody that's performing CPR to keep that blood going so that person doesn't die of brain aneurysm, and then you get somebody else to call 911 to get more help on the way. You get the process rolling, and you get the scene safe, the person stabilized, the stuff going, yeah. And then you call 911 to get more help.
And I don't want to mistake this with, I don't want listeners to be confused with calling 911 after you have to use your gun to defend your life. That's important. You got to do that. No, I'm talking about when the stink goes down.
That's calling after the fact.
You don't call 911 right. While it's going down.
And even law enforcement, you hear it, and you can watch the videos, and you see the body cams from cops that are in the middle of a firefight, and instead of shooting the bad guy, he's screaming on the radio for help.
Yeah.
And a police officer has that direct line to all those other people in his area that when he screams for help, he needs help, all his brothers are coming running, and if you're a civilian, you better get the snot out of the way because he's going to plow your vehicle
but
to get there.
But we civilians don't have that.
Yeah, they're not going to do that. It's going to take a while.
Right, we don't have that backup.
And even then, the law enforcement, I mean, he's screaming on the radio for help, and by the time his buddies get there, it is over one way or the other.
Exactly.
Even with law enforcement. And those guys are getting there half of the time as when you call 911. So when you call 911, it is going to be over by the time they get there. And if there's a police officer close enough to do something about it, he heard the commotion, he's standing there. So get yourself, fight. Win.
Exactly, fight and win.
Get the scene stabilized. Get to where you're safe for the immediate future, and then call 911.
And the vast majority of these terrorists are flat-out cowards. When they realize that the crowd that they're trying to kill wants to now try to kill him, most of these people are going to either quit or they're not going to be very effective. Some of them are such cowards, they kill themselves.
Yeah, the true jihadists, you're probably going to have to kill them.
Exactly.
A lot of these mass shooters that we have in the United States that are homegrown, as soon as they see any kind of resistance, they turn the gun on themselves and commit suicide.
Exactly. Or at least they're, you know, the killing stops quite a bit. Well, good discussion, Ben. This was good. We're almost done, almost home.
So much for having fun and talking about guns, and then we went to Orlando.
Well, I know. That was my fault.
But that's all right. We had fun.
I think it's stuff that had to be said. The first segment we was real positive. We were talking about wanted to shoot.
Just stand up and fight, darn it. Don't go down. Don't go quiet into that good night. Stand up and fight.
If you're going to go, why would you want to go without a fight?
Stand up and fight. If you're going to go, stand up and fight.
Exactly. All right, Ben, thanks.
Well, that's all, folks. This episode is almost over. Thanks for hanging in there with me for about an hour and a half. I appreciate that. Usually these shows are not that long, but I had a lot of stuff to say to you this week. And I forgot to mention, you know, most of you know I've recently fought cancer. God brought me through it. My wife is battling ALS, and it's been tough. It's been real tough. And my son is just doing a terrific job. And he's doing far better than I ever expected. And he's 18 now and learning what life is all about, trying to get on his own. Although he's not finished up with school yet, so he's got to do that. And then probably off to college. Well, that's all, folks. Thanks again for listening. I hope you got a lot out of the interviews with Ben Branham, a little bit of good stuff there, the mixed bag. And I hope you got something out of learning a little bit about me. And again, I don't like to talk too much about me, but you guys asked, and so I covered it. Next week, folks, I got some good stuff planned. I have a really cool interview that I'm actually going to conduct this week, and that'll be next week's show. You're going to love it next week. I'm going to be talking with Rob Morse, and he's on two podcasts. He's on the Polite Society podcast, and he's on Self-Defense Gun Stories. And we got a pretty cool topic that we're going to talk about next week. So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World podcast. I am Bob Main. I carry a gun because I cannot carry a cop. And remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Shoot straight, shoot safe. I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye. I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand.
streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Eho Fox. Gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein.